The series, the four-part series that I've been doing tonight is part two, is How to Train a Boy. We had part one a couple of weeks ago, which was, somebody remind me,
Establishing
Trust with a capital T, which largely was about intimacy. Okay, it's not going to be radically different in that way tonight, because again, what I'm doing with this series is encouraging people to be more thoughtful, to be more connected, rather than just using each other. I'll talk more about that shortly. But tonight's theme is finding the buttons. Okay, this is where we talk about how to test somebody to find out what works and what doesn't work, how to read somebody, how to stay intentional throughout the entire process. So we'll be talking more about that. What makes it so different tonight is that I have appointed someone tonight to be my interrupter in chief. Stand up, please. This is Bobby. Yay. And a hug. Part of my talent is spotting when something's different. And one of the things that I noticed today, every conversation that I have with Bobby always involves him giving enthusiastic, instantaneous feedback that is always on point, always very insightful, and rather deep. So then what I thought, you know, I'm going to ask Bobby to... Hi, welcome. I'm going to ask Bobby to turn this, to encourage all of you guys to turn this into... Yes? Tommy. Did I say Bobby? That's Bobby. Okay, one of you were... Okay, you're wearing a hat, so I can tell you guys apart. No. Tommy. Okay. Damien, I'm expecting you to go back and edit that for me. God, it's hell being old.
I know.
Yeah, really. Okay. I have my powers. That is not one of them. I'm a man of many virtues, but that's a vice. How many people here have I done that to? Lots. I apologize. I just wish I inherited that part from my mother, the oblivious clan. Okay, so getting back to it. What I want is to be distracted a lot tonight. Okay, I have terrible continuity of thinking. I have the attention span of a three-month-old puppy. So I'm asking to crowdsource Grandpa's memory tonight. That was a perfect example. Meaning that if I'm talking about somebody and somebody goes, ooh, Mr. Cotta, you know, starts raising his hand, then I can say, okay, come up with what it is that you need to say, and then I'll say, all right, everybody, what was I talking about? And then you'll all guide me, and then we'll move on. Okay? So I'm asking you to take that on tonight, to everybody help me sustain continuity throughout, because that's never been my strong suit. Okay? So, getting to the topic, I'm going to tell a little bit of personal history in my case. When I first started having sex with men, I didn't have any good role models. There really wasn't a lot of really good porn back then available either. You could go down to the F Street bookstore and they would show stuff, but it was kind of soft core stuff way back in the mid-70s. When I started playing with other men, I had a nickname of Thunderbun. Because I had this ass, this particular center of gravity. It's always been part of me. And everybody wanted to fuck me. And I thought, well, I guess that's what I have to do. Okay. And I would bite the pillow, and I would bleed, and I would suffer, and I would have a very bad time for several days afterwards. But I thought, that's just what you have to do, because I didn't know any better. Then one day, I was back in the Navy. It was a Wednesday. I had the day off to do some laundry. I was off duty. I lived off base over here in Hillcrest. I was in the laundry room. And this little guy, very nondescript, really not my style, but he really thought I was hot, and he was doing the mating dance. He thought he was just going to play with me, and I was like, please don't bother me. I just wasn't in the mood. But so then finally, he was so insistent, I said, okay, fine. I'll give him a thrill. What the hell, right? Instead, I became his butt slave for the next 3 weeks because he was the first guy that I'd ever met who knew what the hell he was doing. He was the first guy who really read me, who really wanted me to have a good time. Everybody else was doing what dogs do, jump on, pump, squirt, jump off. And I said, please teach me. please. That's the first time I knew it was possible to really feel it and enjoy it and be glad that afterwards and not experience any pain.
Well, it's just the simple fact that if the cops don't know what they're doing, they really shouldn't be playing around.
But where's the certification? That's the problem. A lot of people shouldn't be parents either. We know about that, right?
Yes.
But
a lot of this is common sense.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't play around with the bottom without licking his ass. That's just common courtesy.
Show of hands, who likes that? I like that. Yes.
That, and if you are playing around the bottom, it's common courtesy just to give a reach around and have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
That, and you have to show that the bottom is worth playing around with. You have to be nice to him. You have to be kind to him.
Thank you.
It's the only way to play with him.
Tommy's being precocious because he's jumping ahead to part two. Good job, man. Good job. Thank you. Now, all of the rest of you have the right to interrupt me as well, like I said. Okay. Now, I was talking about the guy who was teaching me. Now, I've told this story before, but I don't think it's been recorded. What that inspired me to do, that one man transformed my life. I sent him lots of blessings over the decades, because that was a long, long time ago. But what I did is I started making it my personal, I called it my holy duty. I really did. To not only thrill other people in the same way that he did for me, but to teach them how to do it. Okay, we'll be talking about some technique tonight. First time in a while. I'm usually talking theory. Tonight we'll talk more technique. But what I also did, as many of you have heard in the past, is I started diving deep into the gay Leathermans community. And it was very fun. I had a lot of fun. But in every case, when I would play with somebody, especially with an older man who knew what the hell he was doing, there were a lot of sexual athletes back in the 70s, then I would say, how could I make this better? And they would tell me. So I learned a lot. And I've retained it, which makes me rather unusual because I was in the midst of all that and I didn't die. So that's part of the reason why I've been doing this series, in order to pass on some of the stuff that I've learned over the decades. What I would like is somebody to jump up and tell me an example of how it does not work well for them. Come up with a nice horror story of how things have not gone well, like I said, with the guys that would, treat me very shabbily. Who's got a good horror story? I know we all have them. No? Okay, just coughing. Okay. Oh, this is a quietly shy group tonight. My goodness, nobody wants to say a thing. All right, let's hear. Damien, say it again. Yeah, give me a horror story of how people have not been considerate of you.
Don't use shampoo to jerk me off in the shower.
Yeah. Don't use shampoo to fuck somebody in the shower either. Yeah. Yeah. What's that?
Or lotion for that matter.
Or lotion, yeah.
One of the first guys I started playing around with at one point in time, it was back when I was living in Alabama, and at the time I didn't mind cons, but at the same time I can't stand Vaseline to save my life, and he didn't even, foreplay wasn't even in the question, not even a basic kiss or rubbing around each other. It was basically bend over, bite the up in the pillow, and I'm just going to ram it in about as hard as I can, and if you don't get the bottom's asshole twitching, it ain't going to work. He's not going to enjoy it. He's not going to want to come back. It's that simple. You've got to make the bottom just beg for it. And don't get him to verbally beg for it. Watch his body.
Mm-hmm.
Once you see his little butthole and it's twitching and it's doing that little thing and, he's grabbing a pillow and he's biting and he's just begging for it, that's when you know you've got him. Then after that, you can have your fun.
Mm-hmm. And in order to be doing that. Thank you very much. What that implies is that somebody wants to pay attention. So what would be the payoff for somebody to pay attention, for somebody to be attentive to the needs of their playmate? A lot of guys get away without doing that. Why should they bother? Well, I'm talking to the guys who want to care. I'm talking to the guys who are much, much more interested in achieving true ecstasy, which is the fourth part of the series. Talking to the guys who want to have a power flow of intimacy and energy and going into top space and bottom space not even being able to form words because you're having such a good time. Well, that doesn't happen by magic. It does happen by people taking drugs. None of the things that I talk about have to do with taking drugs. I'm talking about going about it the natural way because that's a better long-term result. Yes, please.
That was my first experience. The first guy who ever fucked me, got me stoned, and thought that that was sufficient to just ram it in with very little lube, if any at all. And then the second time, he gave me muscle relaxers to get me to be receptive to him. And after that point, I learned that I was the one who was responsible to get my body ready if I was going to be receptive. I had to relax. I had to prepare myself mentally as well as physically by touching myself and just doing certain other things that no one bothered to show me or tell me.
Yeah. And thank you very much. The old hyper macho joke is, my favorite foreplay is brace yourself. It makes for a funny joke, but not in real life. Yeah. What's that? Oh, somebody has a story to share. In order to be an effective top, getting back to the larger theme, you have to look at the long run. Because if you just use somebody and throw them aside like a used piece of toilet paper, sooner or later word gets around that you're not nice, that you're not a good person, that you're, you know, you may have, you know, certain features, but the overall picture stinks. Everything that I talk about during this entire series and everything that I always talk about has to do with looking at the long run, that sooner or later we have to have some kind of responsibility to each other in both directions. I'm always talking about that. Well, part of that responsibility, in my case, I'm just going to speak from my own experience. I play with a lot of beginners, both in kink play and in sexual play. I play with a lot of people of different levels of experience. My pleasure, and this is what I'm teaching people, is to learn how to play that person like a violin. And it doesn't happen in one visit. It really doesn't. In order to really master somebody completely, there have to be multiple play sessions. And then with the intentionality of making it better and better and better each time. I have to do a lot of healing and therapy when I play with people. Because they're damaged. They've been mistreated. They thought that was what they had to tolerate, and then they find out otherwise. I think we have a few stories like that in this room. I can't teach everybody, but everyone within the reach of our voice, and by the way, this weekend I found out there's an awful lot of them. Some of you already had heard this, but I went up to Dory Alley Street Fair, and I had a lot of people come up to me and say, please, keep posting the audio from the men's discussions. They're what keep me sane out in Montana or wherever. So we have, I think, how many have we got that are currently in process?
Six.
Right. Thank you. We're going to keep doing this. It really matters because out there, there are people who really want to hear what you guys have to say and what the overarching theme and all that. So please keep on sharing. So back to the original project. I think I can safely say that I'm a very effective top. I could get by without teaching. I could get by without helping people out. I could skate. But the reason why I turn around and help people is because all the people who turn around and help me in my process. It's what we do. I had a village raise me. Unfortunately, that village died. And that happened. And we're here now. And this is who's here now, and that's why we're having this discussion now. Because everyone in this room has just as much right to mentoring, right to really satisfying play. Everyone here has the right to really be serenely happy, and that's really what our group is about, to find ways for us to mesh with each other. So getting to the actual step-by-step stuff. Let's say that I am playing with somebody for the first time. I do a lot of testing to Tommy, would you stand up, please? Do not confuse an old man. Yeah. Okay. As I've talked before in these, I talk on multiple levels. I not just use words to reassure somebody that the big scary guy is not going to, like, violate their trust, that I really have a commitment to their well-being, that I really do give a damn about what happens next. I will use assertive, declarative statements. I promise that this will turn out really nice. You'll see. Because I have to reassure them. A lot of them have had past history. A lot of them have stereotypes. A lot of them have noise in their heads, whatever. But by putting my ass on the line and saying what my intention is, it's very reassuring to people. Okay? And then I live it. I don't just use the words. I live the words. Okay? So if I'm taking time... Now, one of the things guaranteed to break down defenses, the middle of a man's back is never a bad place to scratch. So if I'm getting somebody and they're shy and they're tight and they're unsure and their muscles are locked up and all of that, I'll just say, okay, face down on the bed. What I'm doing is I'm seeing how quickly they comply. Because if somebody's like unsure about that, I know that there's still no trust. But somebody says, yes, sir, boom. Oh, there's one. But I have to get them to that point where they want it. But by having them lay face down and talking to them, praising them, and I always have to mean it. This is really important. If you praise somebody, you have to fucking mean it. There is no other choice.
And because, all he gets is his word.
Absolutely. Your word is what represents you in the world. If you bullshit somebody, they can tell. They really can. There's a lot of intuition packed into many, many of us. And if somebody's saying, why would he say something stupid like that? You know, that doesn't apply to me. You've lost them. So you always have to be absolutely authentic. Always. Okay. If I've got somebody on his tummy and I'm checking him out, I'm seeing what his reactions are. I'm checking to see if his sides are sensitive, where he gets a little, gets a little ticklish. They go, there's a button. Okay. If I'm, playing with the nips, and their dick goes boing. I go, aha, it's connected. Noted for future reference. Okay? Pardon? Somebody had something to say? Okay, don't worry about it.
My dick lies.
Really? Thank you, Tom. Tell us more.
Well, because I'd be hard already, and whatever you did, it'd still stay hard.
Okay, I get that.
So it's not an indicator.
So quick. Pardon?
Yeah. I play around with guys that are nipples are extremely sensitive, you can tell the difference. If the guy's nipples are really sensitive and you're sitting there trying to milk his titties, you should start to see a bunch of little bit of lubrication starting to come out the head of his dick.
Yeah.
That's another good
indicator. Yeah. Well. What I would add is it never hurts to ask. That's always the best way. Because if somebody knows that you're really caring about finding out more about them, you notice we haven't even gotten to the jump on and fuck portion. Well, that's fine. If I'm going to play with somebody, I want it to last at least 3 hours.
So, Dirk,
yes.
Yeah. You talked about the touching. For me personally, when I'm having somebody come over and we've already did the negotiation and all that, for me it's for the man to come over and for us to make eye contact first. And then what I'd like, it's all in the undressing.
Yes.
It's like, you know, one piece of clothing is like striptease. And it's like, once I take off the shirt, then I can explore the chest. And then I'm all about smelling, too. I got to pick up your scent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important. Don't come over to my house with any cologne on or antiperspirant.
Yep.
And but I got to pick up the smell. And so it starts there, and then it starts with the touching. And as I take the clothes off, I can do the praising and, oh, you got a beautiful body. And feel me, and we feel each other, and then that gets all the, it gets it going. That gets the juices. You got to make connection first, for me.
I like that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Show of hands. How many people like a good-smelling man?
Oh, yeah.
Yeehaw. Now, I've done the same question about 50.
When I get in the mode, I'm kind of like, I'm not, you know, I'm like an animal, you know, and it's like, I need to pick up that scent.
And, yeah. And it's not just the pits, either.
Yeah, and it's not just the pits, right. And just like Bobby, no,
Okay, he's wearing a hat, so you know it's Tommy.
Right. And it's picking up scent right from the balls, from that ass, you know, yeah.
So,
right.
As you're saying, are you the same way with me? Because, like, I cannot stand perfume, I can't stand deodorant, I think it's utterly disgusting.
Well, when it's time, if we're going to have some, you know, we're going to play and have sex, I mean, I'm not into that.
I'm the same. I mean, before a bottom or a top comes over to my house, I actually want them to go at least like run a half a mile or something, get everything nice and sweaty and smelling just fucking great.
And I think there's a different protocol. You know, if you're at the bar or and you're talking because it's, you know, people, but you know, all this distraction going around. It's a different type of, for me, a different type of language, a different type of approaching to the bar as opposed to negotiating outside of the bar and having the person come over. I like to give instructions. It's like, I want you to wear this piece of clothing and see, does he follow orders? And
yep.
I think that's really important. And it's not like we made any, written in stone, but it's like, is he going to be able to follow orders? So it's like, you know, I want you to wear these jeans and this tight shirt and wear the boots. And if he comes over and he don't have that on, that's yellow light for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because either I'm getting ready to deal with a pushy bottom, or he's going to try to take me down, or, you know, something. It's just a signal like that, and that gets me out of the mood right there. It's like, I told you what to wear, you didn't come over and put the right shit on, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say that, like, the right shit, but it's like, that would be language right there, for him not to come over, and I gave instructions.
It's a clear communication, right. Yes.
And be on time. That's
yes.
Elaborate on the whole hooking up at a bar to hooking up on a website. I think it's quite a different dynamic. Hooking up on a website, we've all done it, and you have to ask for another photograph. You have to go through these almost directions, as you described it a little bit, the way you described it as well. You have to let them know how to prepare. I personally am a real life slut if I'm going to do it. Like, you're going to go to a bar. There's something about meeting somebody in person that you have a natural reaction to. When you're talking about animalistic instincts, getting into that headspace, you're automatically there. You're automatically connected. And to me, there's something a little more intimate, a little more gets lost about this part about the community, because we are so enveloped with Scruff and Recon and Grindr and Anaparatum and BBRT and all that other stuff. You're not getting that intimacy that you would normally in the community. Encouraging other people to come out into the community helps you have that one-on-one activity, that one-on-one interaction, which creates that natural bond. Mm-hmm. When you're out at a bar, you see a guy, you make that eye connection, you make that eye contact, you walk up to them, you see the way they are, you see how they hold themselves, their demeanor. You don't need direction. You already know, and that to me is my turn on. I want that feeling, that spark. I want to know what's happening. I want to know what's going on. I want to be able to see someone across the bar and know that that's for me, or that will be for me. Let me, you know. Shit, sweatshirt.
And it don't have to be the bar. I mean, I booked up a lot at Sprouts. If he looks at me and I turn around and he's looking back, that means approach. And I'm going to
make sure that has a connection.
Sometimes somebody come to your house that you don't know, and you know you've gone through the whole ritual thing of you know, all the pictures. Show me another picture, face picture. You know, and all this shit, and then they get to your house, and there is absolutely no fucking connection.
You're
like, you open the door, and you're like, oh, hell no. And it's not always about maybe they don't look as good or whatever. There's just no connection. Sometimes they look really good, but there's no connection for me or for him. Or sometimes there's a connection for one, and there's not a connection for another. Does not make a good play date.
I have a Starbucks card, and we're meeting for coffee before you even come over to my house.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll meet you all. See you online.
Hold everybody. Hang on. I get what we're doing is we're actually pursuing the same thing, and I'm going to do a very weird sidebar, and we'll get to you. pheromones. In the tip of your nose, I forget exactly how to pronounce it, but it's the vasomar nasal gland or whatever. In the tip of your nose, it is not something we understand consciously. But if you take a bunch of women and you put them into a convent or into a dorm, they all start menstruating at the same time. That's not conscious. What controls it? Pheromones. If you take a brand new movie theater and you take a man's sweat and you rub it all over one of the fresh new seats and you videotape what happens, when the women come in, they head for that seat first. Okay? Say it again? What was it? Oh, yeah, gay guys too. Thank you. But what, okay. What they're saying now, the current status of the understanding of this, as I understand it, and I'm not anybody's scholar on the topic, but I'm more than interested in it, is that what they're discovering is that pheromones directly affect our choosing of playmates and life mates. Because if they don't smell right to you, they don't get past first base. Just like the example you gave. But it's not something that we consciously smell like, you know, some people, you know, think I smell like shark repellent, you know, or rocket fuel or something, but other people, they can't stay away from me. If I'm dancing over at Numbers and I put my arms above the air, I'll have one guy on each side going la 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 la. And I'm used to that, you know. I mean, it's, yeah. So attraction has a lot to do with being in their presence. That's what, again, you've heard me bitch and bellyache, and I won't do a lot of it tonight, but about the online experiences. We're not really evolved for, it's a good way to initiate, but it's not the whole experience. But what I'm talking about is what we were actually evolved for, actually being able to connect with somebody and to build each other up and up and up, and the energy goes through the roof and everything's extraordinary, and 40 years from now, you high-five each other saying, wasn't that fucking awesome? You know. Because a lot of guys will try and do the shortcut. They'll do the drugs. I would rather have 1% of the real thing than 100% of the fake. Because I don't want to have to force my inhibitions down. I don't want to hammer my fears. I want to just let go of them, and I want to be encouraged to let go of them. The trust goes in both directions, top and bottom, and top and bottom and top and bottom, depending on the party. But, you know, there has to be a sense of connectedness. So how do we get to that place? We have to break down each other's barriers through negotiation, through meeting each other at the Starbucks, through face-to-face stuff. If that's what we're looking for. Again, getting back to what we talked about before, the difference between quantity, which we all do, you know, at some point in our lives, and quality. This is all about quality. So what were you going to say, Michael?
I was going to make a point about magnums, about negotiation. But let me just say something. Technology, new technology, the internet.
Yes.
We don't have a synopsis for that yet. But I compare it very much as looking at somebody across the bar. You see them, it's a visual thing. Mm-hmm. It's a visual thing. And we've all met people at the bar that it's just like meeting somebody online. When you actually start talking to them, it's like, no, not it. But negotiation is the basis of intimacy. That's the fastest route of building trust, because you're making negotiations. Mm-hmm. You're staking territory. Learning each other's expectations, and I think that's what the basis is. Negotiation to me is pure foreplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's supplemented by the feedback, right?
Oh yeah, because you're negotiating.
Reading the response.
It's beginning to know you're actually having a live dialogue with someone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So when you're talking to someone, you're on a script. They're like, again.
Well, no, I'm not talking about script.
A new thing.
Negotiating. That's what you do.
It's type of negotiation. If you're in person, the response is stimulating.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, right. You're anticipating what you think you want to hear, and then they respond, and they may tell you more, or they may tell you less. And then if it's more, then you're way more stimulated, and then you're intrigued, and then you ask more questions, and you're willing to learn a little more.
We're
Magnum was so smart is the copy. Yeah. Because, I mean, you can talk to somebody on the phone. Okay, it's the same thing as the internet. It's an electronic connection. But we're used to phones now, so we trust phones a little more. Mm-hmm. And we'll say intimate things over the phone, and they'll make that connection. Mm-hmm. But you still need...
Isn't the barrier to protect yourself from that?
But it's personability, and I think breaking down in our community is making yourself vulnerable and making yourself accepting within... accepting other people's culture and what they're into and their other fetishes, and it's about communicating. And taking the impersonal route might hinder you, while for some people it might help them and be more of an exhibitionist. For others, they prefer.
I'm just saying,
some people do not look like their photographs. They present false information. It's like a mind game that, you know, it's just not real. So I've chosen not to use the internet for my encounters.
Of course.
I'm not talking about using the internet.
I'm not talking about using the internet.
Try to do it one at a time if we can. Yes.
But it is a way, it's another way of meeting people. And you'll find out that's why the negotiation is important. And that's why the negotiation is meeting one-on-one. You're not negotiating over the internet. You're meeting over the internet. Mm-hmm. And then you negotiate. That's why you meet for coffee. That's why you go for coffee first, and then you talk.
How many people do that?
I do.
I do.
Yeah, I do.
I do.
Most.
Okay, hang on, guys. Hold that thought. We got somebody over here.
Okay, but DJ. But there have been times when guys did show up and they were actually better looking than their picture, and they were really fucking hot, and it was because there was a connection. So sometimes that's why I say it's fucked up, because the picture really doesn't. Yeah, sometimes you get a really blurry ass picture and it looks terrible. And then sometimes a guy shows up and you're like, oh my God, you're so fucking hot. You know, it does happen. You know.
Well, that's the same thing at a bar.
Yeah.
You see somebody, they're so fucking hot, then they open their mouth and garbage falls out.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the visual. I mean, we are visual beings too.
Yeah, well, what I assert is what we're actually talking about is three levels of communication already, and I'm sure that there's infinite numbers of them, but we're talking about words, we're talking about touch, and we're talking about pheromones so far. All of these are things that have to happen when they're at their best up close so that we can use our bullshit detectors, use our intuition, follow our gut. We can say, this is a hell of a guy. Maybe I'm prejudging him too much. Maybe I should give him a nice chance. What were you going
to
say?
Well, I just want to say, you know, I enjoy meeting people one-on-one. It seems to go better more of the time. But on the same side, on the opposite side, meeting people over the internet, my partner and I have met a lot of people that we would have never met or encountered at any bar or any event, because they just don't go to it. They don't know about it, or they're just like, I'm not a public club scene guy, or I don't like going to bear events, or I'm not into the scene, I'm not a joiner. And so we've also made some awesome connections with people that we would have otherwise never met even to begin with, because they wouldn't go out anywhere. So.
Hang on, hold on. Got to get you on here. Hang on.
Not only do you meet local people, but you can really meet very nice people and establish very strong friendship bonds and other bonds when they're across the country or across the state, and you would have never, ever, ever, ever have met them, ever.
Isn't that funny that there's that impulse in us, you know, where you pour your heart out to the stranger on the bus because you know they're about to get off and there's nothing in, you know, nothing invested that you can finally tell the truth to somebody. You know, some people that happens. But yeah, I know. I mean, I know several people who have had, you know, multi-year relationships with people that they've never met face-to-face.
Sir, you know, I've met people all over the world doing this thing with the apps and whatnot out of curiosity. And it's amazing what the fuck you get a person to do just by talking to them.
Mm-hmm. Could you give an example?
I've had people send me pictures that I was interested in. They send them to me. I talk them through it. And I said, now send me your cum shot. And they send me everything. I mean, from face to asshole to feet to whatever it was that I required, they did it. And then they would send it to me. and then boom. So anything is possible. Mm-hmm. But when they want to send you a ticket to come visit in Stockholm or some shit like that, I'm not going. Okay? Because I saw that film, Grim Love. That's not me.
No one wants to fly me in.
Yeah. I think I was kind of, approaches. I was like, well, maybe.
So I'm going to hand the microphone to Tommy for a second.
Okay.
This just stays right here. And if we could just walk around to people and let them share.
Okay, which one do I go to? That, and I just wanted to say this too, while he's out there, y'all got to be extremely careful when you're out there on the internet, because you can get a huge misunderstanding on what they're trying to come across with it. Because when I first got out here, I was extremely new to the gay scene as it was, and I didn't really know what in the hell PNP meant. And I've had a couple of guys, and one guy came over, and I damn near beat his ass, because he got to my house and he handed me this pipe. And I freaked the hell out. And that, and there was other situations where we were going to do a certain type of play, which in his mindset was completely off. Just because you don't know exactly what they're getting at just from typing words. It also helps to hear the tone of their voice and the way they're saying it, which can make it dramatically different. And in the English language, one word means 55 meanings, so it doesn't mean it.
That's the reason on my recon page I say I'm not into pics, I'm not into texting. I like face to face, you always find me at the Eagle or at MSD.
Exactly.
But that's not just the internet, that's real life also.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
That's not just the internet. We're getting used to the internet. That's why I say we're just developing synopsis for new technology. The internet's very new. I mean, also we've got contact of people all over the planet. Instantaneous news. I mean, we haven't filtered. Our brains haven't wrapped themselves around that yet.
Exactly.
And how to use it. Yeah, but, I mean, it's like I have been beaten up by somebody I met in the bar that was absolutely charming and got me outside and kicked me to the curb. So that was not internet. That was after a couple of hours of talking to
him. Did anybody at the bar know this person? Or did he have a reputation at all?
No.
Because I'm trying my best to get away from the internet scene and actually get into the meeting a person scene and actually getting their reputation.
And it's life. There's people.
It could happen either way.
But
scruff right now, you can globalize anyway.
Yeah.
Globally. Yeah. So you automatically connect anyway. Which I can connect to this wolf guy, but not feel connected to him. We can have amazing conversations. But when I meet him, he could be an absolute mess or a tool and have those PNP secrets that they maybe didn't feel comfortable.
Exactly.
As well. For me, person to person is the best way. I mean, if you need to negotiate a coffee meeting, which, you know, I do sometimes, not really, but sometimes. Just saying, sometimes. Because I have a few core group of boys that I play with, though. So it's not something I would
you
do.
You build a fleet feet.
You know, well, yeah. There's certain people that I know and that I will go to, but being in a bar and having that personal connection and smelling the pheromones and watching your eye contact, you need to do more, and that is absolutely everything. And we're a culture based on looking at people. We're very visual. We have all five senses, I hope. Most of us. And if not, your other senses are enlightened. So we are those type of tactile creatures. And going to a bar is going to, by far, give you the most information about a person before going through that 2 hours it took to talk to somebody, go to the coffee shop, go grocery shopping, come back to your messages, rekindle, you know. Go to a bar, that's what I say. Meet that person. Watch them interact with the other people.
I'm just saying, your potential's the same. It's my turn.
Yeah.
As a man, hooking up, you know, playing, all that, all of it takes risk. This risk is involved. If it's on the internet, if it's at the bar, or at Sprouts. It's all risk. And, it all takes risk. That's all I want.
Right. And a way. Yeah, go ahead.
What was the topic?
Finding the button. Yeah, we're all over the place. We're going to get back to the topic sooner or later, really.
Because we've been shopping. We've been shopping and shopping.
Yeah.
Let's get to the buttons.
All right. Let's get to the buttons. So I'm going to talk. Let's hold those thoughts, okay? Just please. Let's kind of drive it back into the groove again. Because that's what happens when I love to hear from everybody, and I'm very forgiving. Yeah. You know, you might notice that strictness is not one of my policies. The stuff I'm talking about so far could happen in any kind of vanilla relationship. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, and then we're going to get into French vanilla, and then we're going to get into kink, you know, and that sort of stuff. But see, one of the things that I do as a talk, I always keep my fingernails short and smooth. I haven't fisted anybody in a long time, but, you know, that's always in the back of my mind. But I always keep them short. The reason why is if I'm playing with somebody for the first time, one of the very first things that I do is I lube up his butt, I'll have him on his tummy, I'll be massaging him, and I will find a way to gently start playing with his butt, with my thumb, usually the thumb that's my power tool right here. I'll get some nice lube, and when I gently start playing and start moving into his butt with my thumb, I'm accomplishing multiple things at once. Okay, this is going to be on the test. What I'm doing is I'm checking to see if he's clean. I'm not into poop. I'm just not. It doesn't make my dick hard. But there's a base at the base of your spine, there's a bundle of nerves, and its job is sort of like a sub-brain. This is what I learned decades ago. It could be entirely bullshit. But this is what I've learned, and I've never seen anything to tell me otherwise, which is its job is to make sure that you don't poop while you're walking. Okay? And if you're not cleaned out, then you're going to be tense. And no amount of trying to relax is going to make it untense. So that's a good reason for helping them clean out. It's one of the things that I like to do when I'm playing with somebody the first time and they have no idea how to douche. I teach them. And just to be particularly assertive, I'll be there in the room while they do it. And they'll be like really uncomfortable with it. I say, if we're going to be intimate, then intimate means intimate. You know, and get used to me being intimate with you because that's just what happens. And then afterwards they go, you know, I guess that wasn't that bad after all. They could relax, okay? But what I'm doing when I'm playing with somebody's butt, I'm finding out where their prostate is. It's very important for future purposes. Two, I'm checking to make sure how relaxed they are. If they're clamped down so tight that, you know, if they farted, be going, then they're not relaxed. And I have to do more seduction technique to get them to relax. They've been hurt in the past. They've been damaged in the past. Well, it's my job to make damn sure that they feel comfy, that they feel rewarded. What I'm doing is that I'm building a positive feedback loop. This is definite technique here. You have to intend to create a positive feedback loop as opposed to a negative feedback loop, which involves clamping down and not being happy about it, being harmed, being hurt. What I do is to help reassure the logical portion of their brain. I say, I will never hurt you in butt play. I make that little caveat, you know, that there's going to be zero pain. I always play with somebody, it's never going to have pain. The reason why I like doing that, one, it's a nice declarative statement, it puts my ass on the line, but far more importantly, it means that I get the rewards when everything that I said came true, when they turn into complete butt piggies. Because if I am playing with them and I can tell that they're not particularly comfortable with it, then I say, okay, I want you to just kind of breathe me in. Just relax. No, not like that. A little bit more. Oh, there you go. You got it. Now more of that. More of that. What I'm doing each time is I'm getting closer to the prostate and I'm just playing with it. Prostate's at the other end of your dick, about the size of a walnut. You know, most of the time it's very hard to find, but the more excited they get, the bigger it gets because you're getting more and more turned on. It's becoming more and more pressurized. The purpose of the prostate is to create the fluid that your sperm swims around in. It also causes a pressure that is very pleasurable and makes them want to come. So if I'm playing with their prostate and I'm going around the edges and I'm playing with the closest edge, just kind of vibrating back and forth, and I'll say, okay, now grab your dick. and they'll grab on. Well, of course it's going to cause their ass to clamp down. I let it happen. I say, okay, really push. Make it feel good. Make it feel good. Good job. Good job. Now leave your dick alone because I can tell they're getting hot. I can tell they're getting hot because their prostates get real hard. That's a good signal. What I'm doing is I'm training them to become butt piggies. I'm training them with a positive feedback loop so it always rewards them with pleasure. It's very important. Reason why I do this, you know, it's just like a tiny fraction of what I could be talking about tonight, but these are the essentials. What I'm doing with somebody who is not used to getting fucked in the ass is I'm reassuring them that this is what their birthright was all along. That it's every man, not whether they're gay or straight, every man deserves to have that kind of pleasure and that they get to find out what it is. And they go, oh, so that's what it's about. As I've said in non-recorded sessions in the past, there are two joy buzzers in a man's butt. Who can name them? Who remembers from the last time? All right, prostate, it's full of nerve endings, very pleasurable. Deeper in, you've got the second sphincter. Large amounts of nerve endings, and if the top has a long enough dick, he can reach it, and it's very, very, very stimulating to be poked further deeper in. That is why some guys become size queens. They may not logically realize it, but that's what it's going on. Okay? This will be on the test. Okay. But anyway, so we're talking about seducing somebody who is shy, who is new, who's nervous, who's scared, who's got, you know, a history, whatever. What I'm doing is seducing them, reassuring them, praising them, getting them excited, getting them pleased. Well, what if they're not so virginal? They might know more about what it is that pleases them. They might know what their buttons are. So I ask. Before a scene, I might say, why don't you email some of your fantasies? I do this all the time, kinky or otherwise. I'll say, tell me what you're into. Tell me what you like. Tell me where your limits are. I'm constantly asking for feedback. Feedback is nourishing for a good time. Like we've said before here, a stoic bottom is a waste of my time. I'm not interested in it. Because if I'm not getting the feedback I need, then I lose interest. I get a soft on and I wander into the other room. I'll catch up with you later. Because if somebody's not willing to play full out with me, because I'm willing to play full out, I'm not going to hold back and I'm going to jump. You know, I'm going to have a lot of fun playing with this guy, but he has to meet me somewhere halfway. And I'm not talking about technique. I'm not talking about expertise, anything like that, but just willingness to play. And in order to do that, though, I have to get him to that point. It's my job. I have the responsibility to get him to that point. And the way that I do that is that I'll play with his nipples and watch his reactions. I'll play with his dick. Now, show of hands here, no shame attached to any of this. Who always has a hard dick when they're getting fucked? Right, show of hands. Okay. How many people, many times when they're getting fucked, they don't get a hard on? There you go. Perfectly normal. But there's so much shame attached to it. I'm sorry?
Oh, no.
Yes? What was that?
I said, for me, my dick doesn't get hard because I'm concentrating on getting fucked. So all my energy, my mental right. energy is getting fucked.
So
and you mentioned something about would be an experienced bottom or whatever. It's also in the mating, too. I like to have the, if we already established that, you know, I'm going to fuck him, I like to establish for him to suck my nipples and come to me, and it's like a match. It's like surrender. It's like having him surrender and for an established bottom, and then once he's down on his knees, you know, I'm going to finger that ass and check all that ass out, and then you can see the body moving, and so it's like under a spell. It's almost like True Blood, you know, like a vampire. Yeah, it's like, yeah, and you can see it. I'm speaking for
how many people here are perfect?
I'm speaking for me. It's like to swoon. You got to swoon these, especially the experienced ones. You know, you got to swoon them and get them under my spell.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's it. Glamour. Yeah, you got to glamorize them. And the other thing, you talked about douching and all that. For me, fucking is a shitty deal.
And I don't care how much a person douche or whatever, the shit is going to come out. And what I do is that because for me, I used to be so hung up on the shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I took this class, all you wanted to know about ass, it was about the electric class that I took. And it was all about getting over all the shit, you know, having hang-ups about shit. Mm-hmm. So now when I'm fucking and the shit comes out, I always have my towels ready. And it's just like, that's more of the nurturing, too. It's like, yeah. Wipe the shit off and we're going to keep going. It's like, don't get hung up on the fucking shit.
Okay. All right, Tommy. Let's hear from our resident brown hanky.
Okay, the things I gotta say, and especially for the bottoms that are listening to this, I know quite more about this than I actually should, but as what I'm trying to get at, for the bottoms who don't like douching or just have troubles with it for the longest time, I've been a bottom ever since I was probably a little bit of a foot tall. But anyways, I've learned one thing, and no guy has ever pulled out and had a shitty dick from me. Because the simple fact is, I learned a trick, and it's worked completely. So if the bottoms are listening to this, when you wake up in the morning, make you a pot of coffee and drink about 4 or 5 cups.
Oh.
And you won't have anything left until tomorrow morning.
Uh-huh.
It's always worked for me.
I hear you, and it's a shitty deal.
Yeah.
And this part of the process.
Shit does happen. So now with me, I'm a little bit more red. Now I'm a little bit more tolerant in a way of speaking.
I think it's called being a responsible child and preparing for the worst. Shit happens.
Yeah,
you're
really
gonna
put
boys, you're gonna get dirty. Yeah. Be prepared. Not everyone's professional at doing coffee in the morning. I don't even see the morning. But if I'm going to take it and let them, if they're responsible bottoms, they might want to freshen up, so offer that to them. And if they're not, then by all means, have some things to make sure and don't make them feel embarrassed about it.
Not at all.
Whatever.
Absolutely.
I mean, it happened. We're fine. There's my shower. Come back, I'll be waiting.
There's a washing machine.
There's something there. I'll take care of it.
Yeah.
Be a responsible top, and then
good
you don't have to worry about your bottoms, because you should be taking care of your bottom, and they shouldn't be taking care of you.
Absolutely.
So take care of them.
And for me, I've learned it's a good sign. If shit's coming out, I'm knocking that fucking bottom out.
Good, yeah. There's a reason why they call it fucking the shit out of somebody. All right.
The last thing I got to say is, for you guys out here that are hung like a horse, just to let you know, you're screwed as it is. Because like he was talking about with the second sphincter, even if they do douche, they're only going to douche all the way up to their second sphincter and all that's going to come out and they're going to be clean there. But if you have a 10-inch cock to say, your dick's going to pass your second sphincter and it's just going to bring more down.
Yeah.
So if you've got a long dick, you're kind of fucked anyway.
You know,
I think you differ on that. It is possible to douche past the second sphincter.
Yeah, you just have to know how. Yeah, that's one of the things that I teach people also, is how to do that. Anybody who's been around, yeah, if anybody's been part of the Red Hankies crew, you know a lot more than just those techniques, but that's kind of beyond tonight's topic. But yeah, all right, so getting back to the main topic, and by the way, this is really wonderful, and I'm very much enjoying this, thank you. I really need to start saying more things to the people listening, such as when I had the show of hands on who has, you know, experienced losing a hard-on while getting fucked. It was probably about, a little over a third of the guys, and then, about 50-50, and then the other 50% were the ones whose dicks stay hard. The point is that if we pattern only upon porn, as I've said way too many times, then it's going to lead you to think that there's somehow something wrong with you individually. And I'm letting everybody off the fucking hook. Whatever shows up for you is what is actually showing up for you and is perfectly valid. That is one of the things that I have to teach somebody when I start playing with them, is you're fine. It's okay. Shit happens, and I like you this way anyways. Let's keep playing. Again, finding the buttons can be as simple as asking. One of the things that I like to do, before, during, and after is solicit feedback. I will actually ask. Before, I will ask face-to-face or through email. I'll say, send me your fantasies. But just be aware that I'm not going to treat it like a Chinese menu. I'm not going to choose one from column A and one from column B. I'm not following a script. I'm getting a sense of where you're coming from. Because you have experience in topic A, topic B, topic C. Well, I know a few things about those, but also about topic D, which kind of lines up with, you know, that. I'm being overly vague, but you get the idea. Because there's things that I have particular skills at, and I want to introduce you to them. Yes, I do. During play, as you guys, many, many here have witnessed when I play with them, for the first time especially, again, back to the previous topic, where I'll say, you know, on a scale of 0 to 10, with 10 being intolerable, where are we now? Reason why that's so important is because, again, the process is called calibrating. Because I want to understand that if I'm doing kinky play with somebody, if I'm seducing them into pushing their limits, I'm doing it not because it's my hobby, but because pushing somebody's limit is helping them to expand their consciousness, expand their experience level, and to expand their potential for having ecstatic time. What if they've never experienced true ecstasy? And I'm not talking about the drug. Well, my job is to guide them along that process. With each person, it's going to be different. In every circumstance, there's going to be pitfalls along the way, and we have to be okay with that. Along the way, there's going to be an awful lot of renegotiating. There's going to be a lot of misunderstandings. But by staying clear in our communication, by being constantly present to what's going on, and I'm not talking about just the top, I'm talking about tops and bottoms, then that's how you get better and better at it. But during play, this is very important. I'm making the point that I always make. There isn't a single man in this room or listening to this who is a single note. Every one of us is a symphony. Every one of us has the right to a full range of experience. That's why I like to do long play sessions. I'm doing a pendulum swing in the air with my hand right now. We've got hardcore extreme at one end, and at the other end we've got giggling like little girls because something really funny just happened. Okay. And in between there's everything else that's part of the experience of our birthright as men to have really, really good times, including cuddling, including tickling, including biting, including kink of every kind, including, please, cocksucking and butt-fucking, yeah, I vote for that. In fact, I recommend it strongly. But see, when people lose sight of that, you know, where they think, well, I've got to perform, I've got to be in that porn video. Well, they don't really show the whole story. Sometimes in the porn videos, they'll show behind the scenes in some of them. That's nice. That actually shows them relaxing, you know, two guys standing side by side, swinging their meat from side to side just to be cute, you know, or whatever. Well, that's nice, but it doesn't show the rest of it. It doesn't show the douching, doesn't show the preparation, doesn't show them being, you know, getting a sense of each other. Because one of the things I was going to ask Jay before he left, he could only stay for the first half. He had negotiated that with me earlier. But I was going to ask him, what if you're in a porn vid with somebody and you clearly are not on the right vibe with each other, that the pheromones are wrong or whatever the hell it is, how the hell do you deal with it? You know, because that would be a very salient point. Because I don't know that I'd be able to do with it. You know, if it's not working, I'm the first one to stop it. Yes, I'm coming over.
Seen a live porn injection?
Pardon me, say it again?
You ever been seen a live porn shoot where you can inject stuff in your dick and make it hard?
Yes, I'm aware of that.
So that's
and
good.
And on some level, I agree with you. Yes, I know that quite painfully well. We've got pictures, I believe, that depict such a thing. Oh, that reminds me, I forgot. I'm going to pass around some pictures from Dory Alley.
Isn't that why they're called actors?
Is that like, what?
Isn't that why they're called actors?
Yeah, well, yeah, there's really good acting, and then there's, you know, sometimes you can tell when there's really not clicking.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Dan, if you play around with a bunch of them, or
that's right.
That doesn't have to happen.
By the way, the picture of the of the wooden pole shows about 3 million rusty staples. It's on the corner of Castro and like whatever the next block down from Market is. Yeah. So anyway, so it's an interesting picture, but it isn't particularly lusty, but it's interesting to see. So we're just passing around pictures from Dorielli now. I didn't take a lot of pictures. I was kind of busy. But anyway, so getting back to the topic at hand. It is your birthright to have really extraordinary play, whether it's sexual or not. There's many times where you'll play, and there is no sex involved whatsoever, but it's still deeply intimate. It's still connectedness. It's still relatedness, if it goes well. I've been to any number of kinky play parties where, of course, no one's doing any kind of sexual stuff at all. And you can tell when nobody knows each other and nobody trusts each other. And it's just sort of like people making motions at each other. And it's not connected. And I find it very distressing for me because me being the big border collie that I am, I want to gather everybody together and say, okay, here's how it's going to go. I bet they'd really like it if I did, but, you know, sometimes that's just not my place. But what I do, what I'm really teaching in the midst of all this is taking responsibility and encouraging others to take responsibility. Too much of our culture is aimed at trying to deal with victimhood. Oh, he did this to me, or I'm just waiting for him to fuck up, or whatever, because there's no responsibility in being a victim. By being responsible, it's not a burden. It's not a gun to the head. It's a joy, because people who are professional victims, it's always somebody else's fault. Well, pretty soon they lose all of their support, because people figure out that they're just, you know, whatever friends they've got left realize that they're next on the shit list and they don't want to support them. But if somebody is responsible, someone really, 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 really wants to be a better top, a better sir, a better bottom, whatever, and they're willing to do what it takes in order to establish trust, establish commonality, establish intimacy, word gets around. Oh, I thought you were going to say something. Okay, I'm going to do a very weird sidebar. And the only reason why is because it just occurred to me. I've been meaning to talk about this, and it never seemed like the right time. I'm going to talk about top drop. It has nothing to do with the topic tonight. This is a real thing. I've run into any number of guys who will take a whole weekend to really, really, really make life special for a bottom. And they'll go through the whole thing. They'll take them around the world. They'll have all sorts of play. And then at the end of the weekend, they go home and they crash. And they're like depressed and they're really, really unhappy and, you know, feeling sad and feeling broken down or whatever. That is a normal thing. It's not unusual. It's because we've been so endorphinated for so long, then the receptors in our brain with, you know, serotonin and oxytocin and whatever the fuck, you know, all that stuff is, then it's like more. I'm stimulating, injecting into my vein, you know. And that can be happening with any, you know, anybody, you know. I mean, one of the local tops here in town has been very, very busy, unable to attend events, and he's going through a lot of depression right now. I said, for God's sake, you need to have a romping good play session and get your endorphins up, because basically you're addicted. You've gotten so used to it that now that you're not getting it, it's very depressing. It's a normal thing. Yes?
Do you mean the top drops?
Yeah, the top drops, yes. It's also known as post-event depression if you're a community leader. You spent months planning a big whoop-de-doo, and then it finally happens, and then you spend the next 3 days afterwards, you know, wishing you could die because you just feel so bad. You've been endorphinating yourself and revving up your engines and revving them up, and then when it all goes away, then the dream is dead and you don't know what the hell to do with it. It's normal. It's expectable. And the way you make it happen in a much shorter time is you dive in. If you pretend it's not happening, it's going to last longer and you're going to scrape along the ground and it's not a pleasant thing. So just get it over with. You know, dive in, you know, get out the gallon container of ice cream with the big spoon and just go for it, you know. Whatever it is that works for you. All right. So, at this point, do we have any questions, any observations, any thoughts so far? There's more. Yes, please.
On the topic of feedback, it's you know, it's great for the top to get feedback from the bottom. It's really great for the bottom to get feedback from the top, too, especially in situations where, you know, where he was describing where, you know what, maybe the bottom's going to be servicing the top a little bit more at first. It's good to know, like, hey, do you like to have your balls tugged on, or do you like to have your nipples played with while I'm sucking your cock? I mean, like, there's feedback is good for both sides. It's not just...
Absolutely. Thank you for making that point. Yes?
Yeah, yeah. When you talk about feedback and you talk about Stoicism, yeah, bad thing. I played with a guy last week. It's his first time playing with a sadist, and he was trying like hell to make no noise at all because he thought that's what was expected. And as soon as I told him that if he continued to act like that, I was going to send him home because I was getting no feedback at all, he became the most verbal thing I've ever heard in my whole life. It's like they took off a corset and sound came bubbling out of his soul. And he just whined and whimpered and screamed and squealed. It was fabulous. But he thought that's what was expected. So it's important to tell people up front that, you know, we had the whole Stoicism speech, and then we went back into play, and then it was a hell of a lot more fun for both of us. So just feedback is important.
You and then you.
So we have aftercare for bottoms so that they don't crash after being endorphinated. Is there like an aftercare for tops so that they don't crash after one of those weekends?
Interesting question. Well, staying in communication afterwards is good for both of them. It really is. That's the first thing that I would say, because if I'm feeling lonely, if I'm feeling like I want more, then that's the first thing I say. I have to say it. I can't not say it. If I'm feeling really lonely for somebody after a particularly good weekend of honeymoon, then I like to make sure that we stay in communication so that we both know where we're at. And it's reassuring to me as the sir, and it's reassuring to them as the submissive. Because, you know, we're all needing reassurance, no matter how bulletproof and, you know, no matter how we appear to be made of boilerplate and rhino hide, you know, there's a tender heart inside. Yes?
And how about for event planners and community leaders?
Oh, thank you. Back to event planners and community leaders. It helps a lot if you have a support system of fellow community leaders. If you're doing it entirely on your own, you're going to have your heart broken no matter what, because it does take a village to support a community leader, answering your question. Because somebody who wants to make a difference, someone who wants to raise money for charity or wants to, you know, gather people together in common friendship and, you know, joy, somebody who wants to do that, if he's the only one doing it, then pretty soon he's going to feel unappreciated, he's going to feel left out, he's going to feel like, why am I bothering? But if he's got a bunch of other people with equally big hearts who say, we appreciate what you do, feedback, we love who you are, feedback, and please keep doing this because you can count on me to help the next time, feedback. It's really, really important. And I can't tell you how many people I've seen over the years who are being the top for the community, you know, being, you know, or the bottom for the community, depending on how you see it, just a moment, who think that they have to do it all themselves. And that's just a waste of effort. Because, again, as a tribe, we have to have each other's backs. And that includes being able to, like what people do with me personally, I don't normally share this. But I mean, if you go through my text messages, my phone records, and my emails and stuff, I spend a lot of time every single damn day coaching, mentoring, reassuring, you know, supporting, encouraging people who are community leaders. That's my pleasure. Unfortunately, many communities don't have that yet. So if you feel the lack, maybe that means you need to be that guy. I'm saying that to the people on the recording. Off there in Montana, or off in St. Petersburg, or Tampa Bay. So, somebody had their hand up. I'm sorry, I've already lost track. Yes, please. How about you first, and then other people?
I just wanted to say that you'd be surprised at how many people, especially bottoms that I've been with, that
hold everything in. They don't verbalize anything. They give you no feedback whatsoever. I've had to tell people over and over, the more you moan, the more excited I get.
Yeah. Yeah.
The more you wiggle, the more you show me that you're enjoying yourself, the more I'm going to do to try and please you as a top.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, somebody just lays there like a dead fish, I get a soft on. I really do. I lose it. I'm not interested. Well, that sounds spooky. Oh. Oh. All right. Yes, Tom.
Yeah. Okay, when you first run into these bottoms that are like this, simply just tell them, don't act like a dead body. I'm not big into verbal response. I like to see the body move. I like to see it twitch. I like to see it jump. You know, the louder you get and the more chance the cops get called because we're disturbing the peace, the happier I am.
Okay, somebody else had their hand up? Okay,
well,
yeah.
They're loose. Sometimes I want to put you where I want you. I don't want you to move. I'm going to silver shoe, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on my mood.
Mood
we create.
That's perfectly normal. I love that. Yes, there's somebody else raised their hand. Yes.
Yeah, there are actually solutions to the things like community leaders that have planned big events. And I think I see no reason why the same kinds of things would not apply to a play weekend type for people. That's why we schedule things like debriefing after the event is over. And you don't do just one, but you do a series because that's also a psychological transition back to normal life.
Yeah.
Same thing is true with parties afterwards. So I think, you know, when you know you are the type that's going to have a good weekend or something, plan a debriefing session with a friend or anything else the next week to talk about that, to revisit that, to go through that, because it gives you a transition back to what's normal.
That is deeply wise. Thank you. That is wonderful. One of the points that I have made to several people in this room is that post-event depression, or, like, you know, you've just hosted an event and you're really pissed off because the guy who said he was going to do something didn't do it, and you're really frustrated because it didn't quite go off the way you wanted, and you're focusing on details and stuff. That's actually a good thing, because that is how we become wise. Because that's how we learn and grow. Because if we just have something happen and then just move on without thinking about it, we don't learn from the experience. Versus if we ponder it, we agonize over it, we feel a little bit blue because things didn't work out. These are life lessons. That is how we become wise. People who don't do introspection are the people who never become wise. Yes?
All I was going to say is it's amazing because I did my first event a couple months ago, and I didn't think it was such a big deal, but there was a lot of, you know, catering, getting people invites, get the advertisement out there. Anyway, it all afterwards, I was like, what the hell happened? I don't feel so good. It went off all right. You know, I thought there were some places for improvement, and it's amazing we're talking about it, because I said, you know, I don't feel that good afterwards, and it all kind of went all right. So I was a little surprised that, you know, this is kind of normal.
Oh, yeah.
Because I didn't know it. I was like,
yeah. It's really important to accept that and to go for it. Because, again, I'll come up with the exact opposite. Okay, I'm going to pick on Sarah Palin.
Please.
See, whatever your political viewpoint, you have to admit one thing about Sarah Palin. She believes that she is complete and in and of herself. She has nothing new to learn. You will never hear her apologize. You will never hear her say, I screwed up, and I'm not going to do that again. She just bowls forward saying, I have an opinion, and here it is. I have an opinion, here it is. Whatever you think about her, she does not do the introspection thing. She does not stop and think, wait a second, did I screw up? Should I apologize for that? You're not going to see that. And I'm just using her as an example of the exact opposite, that she has nothing new to learn, versus a thinking and self-aware and introspective and intelligent and ready to grow human being always wants to learn from any circumstance, from even a bad scene with somebody where it just didn't fucking work out. It was
the mayor?
Yeah, no, that would be a good example.
He only said sorry because people told him to.
I know. Yeah, that's another whole thing. Yes, please, Martin.
The one thing I find is that when you have a play night or you meet somebody at a bar, you set up expectations when you shouldn't.
Yes.
Expectations can be really good or really bad. And that is something that I found to really, really help me out by going in, no expectations at all.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Somebody had something to say? Okay. I love it. Okay, getting back to finding the buttons. That was the topic tonight, really. But see, you have to understand, I'm not threatened by how things have been going. We've been all over the damn place. Like I'm always saying, chaos is my comfort zone. Because what's happening is that people are speaking passionately. They're speaking powerfully and intelligently, and we're talking on a very substantive level. This matters. Where else do we have this conversation? Like what I was telling the new guys, I said, every man here is wearing an invisible t-shirt that says mentor across the front of it. Because we all have life lessons that we can share with each other, no matter what our age, no matter whatever our background is. And I'm really, really proud of you guys for stepping up and talking. And if you don't, it's okay too. Maybe it's your time to be an egg and to learn and to grow. You never know. It's okay. So back to finding the buttons. Getting feedback before, during, and after is very crucial. But how you deal with that feedback speaks for your character. Speaking as a top. If I'm getting feedback and I'm just saying, yeah, yeah, whatever, talk to the hand, that's not going to make me very much of a recommendation to people who follow, because word gets around very quickly. Like I'm always saying, you know, that word gets around. Somebody who treats somebody shabbily in the bar suddenly finds that no one will talk to him because word gets around. I can't make somebody be sensitive. I can't make somebody care. I can't make somebody, you know, be a responsible kind of guy. All I can do is invite people to do it, and the ones who respond are the ones that are, for whom our words are going to resonate. And that's who we're trying to reach. Because there are people here in town, I know them quite well, I'm on very good terms with them, but to them it's just so much blah de blah. It's just noise. You know, they're just going to do what they're going to do, and that's their scene, is to go in a very, very, very different direction. Someday we may have them come in and give their viewpoint. You never know. All I'm doing is I'm talking to the sensitive ones, the ones with the big hearts, the ones who need connection. Because you can't make somebody need connection. You can't make them sensitive to other people's desires and needs. If somebody lacks antennas, I'm going to explain that. I have really big antennas. Metaphorically speaking, I can sense things from moment to moment. If I'm playing with somebody, I don't do anything random. This applies to the main topic. Because what I'm doing is I'm paying attention at all times. I'm not thinking about where I'm going to be tomorrow. I'm not thinking about the laundry list. I'm not thinking about anything except being fully present with that person. Everything that I do with that person is part of the scene, even if it seems like it's not. Even if it's just us being silly in the bar together, that's actually part of the scene. It's building trust and getting us to the next level together, because he is now reassured that I'm not going to be a sociopath. He's reassured on many different levels, many of which are not conscious, that I'm actually going to take pretty damn good care of him. And it helps a lot, in my particular case, being as well known as I am, that everybody says, oh yeah, he's a good guy. It helps a lot. Again, the village speaks. Because the bad stuff does get around, but the good stuff does too. And it's very, very desirable. So, everybody's going to be different. We can see it as a problem. We can see it, you know, like I commented last week during the safe scene and non-consensual talk about, you know, the difference between, you know, kinky play and assault. My comment, which I meant, I said, this is scary stuff. It makes me feel like every new person that I'm going to play with is going to be like defusing a bomb. That's what happened when we get too intellectualized about it. I know that I am trustworthy. I know that I am worthy of being trusted. And that is what guides me. And that's why I make the strong assertion to everybody here, I will continue working with beginners. That is my superpower. I have that ability. Like I said last week, I have superhero class intuition. That's what guides me. That's why I've never gotten a red safe word from anybody, ever. And I'm very deeply proud of that. I've never had to end a scene because it was abusive or wrong or broken. I've had people who've gone south on me, but it wasn't because of anything that I was particularly doing. They were reacting to, you know, something that happened to them when they were 5 years old and it suddenly flashed on them. But it wasn't me that did that to them. I just helped them remember it, and then I had to deal with it. But the point that I want to make now is that it is worth investing in each other. It is worth finding out where those buttons are. It pays. There's a huge, huge payoff for being sensitive to people, for paying attention to the little signals, the little body language, the muscle tension. You know, if I'm flogging somebody for the first time and I'm noticing that their back muscles are really bunching up, that's a big signal that maybe I'm pushing it too far. That's when I check in on them. If I notice that someone's behavior changes, whether they go limp suddenly or whether they, you know, suddenly start thrashing around in a way that seems to alarm me, that means I need to pay attention. It doesn't mean I just go bullying forward. That's part of the magic of going 3.5 hours in a play session, because it gives me the flexibility to keep trying stuff, trying the tickling, trying the biting, trying the thud versus the sting, trying lots of different techniques, many of which don't involve toys. But in order to find out what somebody's into, a lot of the times they don't even know. They don't have the language to describe what they're looking for. I think those of us who work with beginners know that quite well. Well, if what I'm dedicated to is to guide them to a new level that they're going to remember for the rest of their lives, really? Because if I'm playing with somebody, especially, you know, a beginner, or if I'm taking somebody to a whole new level that they've never been to before, it is a transformational experience that they will remember no matter how long they live as a breakthrough pivotal point in their life. I welcome that. I rejoice in that. And that's really what I'm encouraging other people to take on as an attitude. That you have the right to have an absolutely ecstatic experience, whether you're a bottom or a top, and the way that you get it is by staying in communication and always being authentic in your communication. Don't blow smoke up anybody's kilt. They'll figure it out. Don't bullshit them. You've got to be authentic. It's so crucial. But finding somebody's buttons, like I say, you know, I'm starting to wind down. Does anybody else have any thoughts, any observations, anything they want to say? Yes, here I come.
Well, I think all the things that you talked about are true. But for me, I also have to have a mental, almost cognitive connection with that person to really have an extended good time.
Yes. Could you tell us more?
Yes. If one's in the mood for just sex talk and everything like that, great. But that's a short timer to me. That's not a long time situation. Like a 3-hour play session without some mental connection for me would not happen.
Of course.
You know, so I think if there is some bond, I might look at somebody and they don't really do a lot for me. But I might talk with them for 15 minutes and all of a sudden they're the hottest thing I've seen all night. Mm-hmm. So I think for me there also has to be a mental connection.
Well, when you say mental, you know, you're distinguishing
an intellectual, and I don't mean just smart stuff. I mean just some bond.
Mm-hmm. Some basis for commonality.
Some basis for commonality. Yes, well put. Yes, exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've experienced that too. I've had a couple of boys that came over, and, you know, hot is the hottest little thing on the face of this planet you'd see, but if, for some reason, if they're, like, the couple of things that I like doing as hobbies or something, and if we can't talk and actually have a decent 35, 45, 2-hour long conversation, if I can't even get that out of them, my dick's just going to look at me and just like, really, what are you doing?
Yeah. Right. Well, that brings up the topic of drugs. I have a zero tolerance policy. I'm not going to do drugs with people, and I'm not going to have them happen around me. I've had a lot of experience with that. I came out as a gay leatherman in 1977, and drugs were everywhere. I nearly overdosed in around 1976. Really. And I realized that I needed to stop. I'm not saying this is good or bad. This is just what happened with me. I took a drug on somebody's advice, and it turned out to be PCP stepped on with smack. And I had to force myself consciously to keep breathing. I was doing projectile vomiting and inhaling a lot of it. And it scared the crap out of me, and it caused me to finally ask the Navy base, you know, people in charge, if I could please have an appointment with a psychiatrist. And it just so happened that he was gay. And he said, your real problem is that you need to deal with this and accept it. It's not going to change. You have to deal with it. And I thought, okay, I'm now giving up all the drugs, and I'm going to go for some guys. And shortly thereafter, I got my first boyfriend, and we had an awful lot of fun. And I, in the rest of the 70s, I would be the only sober person in the room, which made it very difficult for me to connect with people. Because when they're really tweaked on something, the rules are entirely different, and I cannot connect with people. So I would, you know, I'd do the stud thing. I'd fuck 13 guys one after the other. Yes, I was young and juicy. And then I'd say, I'm tired. I'm going to bed now. Oh, man, the party's just getting started. No, you guys have a good time. And incidentally, they're all dead. I'm not putting any judgment on it, but I'm still here. So I've learned from way too much experience with people who are tweaked out on stuff is that I cannot be around it. Because if I'm going to be able to connect with them, I have to connect with them. And I would rather, much rather, connect even just for a short while with somebody on a real level, on an authentic level, on a deep level, on a spiritual and animal level, than to deal with, try to figure out what the hell they're doing and where they're coming from. So I'm sure other people have opinions on this topic. Anybody want to say anything about the lack of connection when you're around people on drugs? Yes, Marty.
Well, you're talking about drugs. Go out to the bars, people are drinking, they get drunk.
Yes.
That's just as bad as being drugs.
It is.
And that just is a turnoff to me. It's a turnoff. I don't want to be with somebody like that.
Yeah.
After living with somebody for 8 years, I don't want to be with somebody like that.
Life is too short.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah, someone else. I'll tell you what, I'm going to go with you, and then you
can. I grew up in the drug era, so I lived through the 70s, and I loved it. I mean, I loved it. I spent 10 years immersed in it, and I had great connection with people. And they're all dead. But anyway, but it was awesome. I mean, it was a great thing. It's just that one day I just woke up and said, I can't live the rest of my life like that. So I just stopped, you know, but I don't regret it. I mean, okay. It was excellent. It was more of a connection than the internet.
There's that. Yes, that's well said. Okay, then you, and then somebody behind you. Yes.
Yeah, and just the other reason one of the reasons I can't stand people who do drugs and all that, they're unpredictable, and you don't know exactly if they're going to take your stuff when you're not looking, or are they going to try to mess something up. You know. I like people that I can just leave the house for a good 2 hours, come back, and not have to worry about it. Is my TV, my Xbox, and all my games that I spent $600 on just going to be, poof, finished?
Just a clarification. The difference between the drugs in the 70s and the drugs now is completely different.
Psychoactive drugs.
Completely different.
Even from a shamanic viewpoint, have been used for thousands of years to deepen connections. So there is, I mean... Tweakers? No. I mean, yeah. A lot of the synthetics, no. But drugs do have their place. And, boy, if you need them, I love having them.
Okay.
I mean, there's a whole pharmaceutical out there.
It's well, could you give some examples?
Intoxicants.
Acid.
Well, acid, yeah. Acid. Mushrooms. HIV medications. I mean, there's a whole... the pharmacy world is huge. Drugs, you know...
Really? Okay, I'm confused and yet intrigued.
Well, I just when you say drugs, I mean there's meds, there's medications also.
Right. Well, what I mean is stuff that the way that I view drugs, I have my opinion. Everybody else is welcome to theirs. But mine is that people are attempting to shortcut to get to what I'm talking about in two more sessions from now, which is going for the gold, going for the ecstasy, going for not just bottom space or top space, but together space, having the power flow. And a lot of times my observation is that people will, who are normally inhibited, who are normally unable to connect with other people for whatever reason, will take various drugs in order to try and force past that and force themselves into a different place instead of what they're really, really, really hungry for is for somebody who loves them enough, respects them enough, and gives a good goddamn about them so that they can actually reach that space without having to use a prop. That's my opinion. Yes.
I just want to share an experience this summer at Wet and Hot, the piss play. Met an athlete there. He was a runner. But the night before, he had somebody's piss, and the next day, he was not well. I mean, he goes, I just wasn't grounded. He goes, I had something, and it kind of, the next day, I was not myself. And so he was asking people, have you done any drugs? Because he didn't want any pee.
Yeah.
It would come all the way through.
It'll go right through you, yeah.
That was, anyway, he, you know, he wasn't really upset, but he was like, you know, he was an athlete, so I think he knew his body, and he knew he had something that was not, that was high, he was high, it wasn't quite, because I wasn't myself all day, you know, and I'm finally grounded now, he goes, but that's, he didn't want any more of that.
Yeah, I understand.
A little off the subject.
No. I mean, let's face it. Yeah, for the first time, we've gone off topic. Yeah.
No, I was actually kind of thinking, you know, this would be a good topic.
Speak up.
This would be a good topic for a whole meeting, is drugs and, you know, sex and so on. And I think, you know, everybody has their opinions on it, and it's one that's worth a lot of discussion.
I think that's a very good idea. Would you remind me?
And I will remind you, but, you know, I also want to get back to buttons and communicating. And I've often found, you know, it depends on the person, if I feel comfortable enough with the person that they're not going to judge me, I can, you know, open up and tell them what I'm into. But other times I feel like a little kid and I'm all embarrassed about it, and I don't know, you know, how to get past that sometimes. I feel shame around a lot of the things, and that's a barrier.
And what I would add to that is that, speaking as a top, somebody who's interested in what you have to say, it is my job to put you at ease enough so that you can get past that point. Yes, Timothy.
I run into that all the time, because like you, I play with a lot of newbies, and I run into guys that can't articulate what it is that they want or what it is that they need, and it's not so much that they don't know, they don't have any idea what it is, they just have a built-in shame about saying, what I really, really, really need you to do is put your foot on the back of my neck and beat the fuck out of me, and then make out for a while, and then fuck me, and then make out for a while, and then cuddle, and then start over, because that's really where my energy needs to go. And they have this shame about doing that. And I have to tell them, I'm like, if you want me to be your top, you want me to be your dom, you need to be able to communicate with me those things. And you need to be able to do it shamelessly. If it's not my thing, it's not my thing. You'll find a top who that is your thing. But the things that we do have in common, we can practice those together. And we can explore that and get to it. So it's a lot of it is coming out. And it is, as you come out as a leather man, you have to come out that second time. You have to come out when you're gay. You have to come out as a leather guy, either top or bottom. There's so many things you have to come out through. It's not even funny. But that shame spiral, you got to get away from that, because you cannot have good sex while you're letting shame hold you back from your reactions.
Well, shame is programmed into us. It's not an accident that there's a lot of shame associated with us. We've had a whole lifetime of being told, you know, you're, I mean, let's face it, the stereotype of kinky gay guys is pretty extreme. It's been changing, but it's still out there, you know, that we're sociopaths, we're brutal, we're, you know, exactly the sort of people that your parents warned you against, blah, 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 blah. What I assert is, as I've always said, all that we're doing is we're practicing extreme intimacy. And that's really what this is really all about. Intimacy comes from establishing trust, from finding mutual interests that mesh, from finding out where the buttons are, and then exploiting the living hell out of them in a way that leaves everybody very, very, very satisfied. And thanks to the internet, one of the great blessings of the internet is that we're finding that we're not the only ones, that there's actually quite a lot of us, and that more and more of the younger generation is like, yeah, so what's the problem here? So it is changing culturally. What people are finding out about us as a group here in San Diego, Fetishmen in San Diego, is that people are joyful when we show up, wherever we go, because we're really good guys, and everybody likes us. We're really admirable, good guys. Yes, we're kinky. Yes, we're maybe in gear or whatever, but we're really sweet guys, because that's what this group is about, is finding the ones who are sensitive, finding the ones who want to find commonality with each other, finding the ones who want to be the wind beneath each other's wings as a tribe. Because that's really what we're talking about on a play level, but also on a cultural level, as I made in my previous talk. In order to have that happen, though, the example they gave, where people are hung up about asking for what they want. Well, it's my job to keep chasing after them, lovingly, but to keep pursuing and cornering them and saying, is this what you mean? You know, column A, column B. I'm going to get them to that, and then I'm going to reward them for answering it honestly. That builds the positive feedback loop. Well, if I could share that with him, then let's see if he can handle this one. Whatever. But how are we going to know unless somebody says, it's safe to tell me. Your feelings matter. I'm not going to shame you. I want you to be proud of yourself. The way that you are is the way that I choose you. Yes.
And the fact that we're having this particular conversation, and I think Stuart started it there, is an indicative that we're not alone in this. I mean, everybody else. There's a line in the book Wicked. It doesn't happen in the musical, but happens in the book. It says, children are constantly changing themselves out of a need to be loved. Mm-hmm. And we don't get over that as adults.
Yep.
So we submerge what we are. We hide that. We don't let all of that out. If we don't commit the sin, we commit the sin of omission. We just leave that out. And I think if we can just remember that every single person is in that same spot, sometimes I need to break the ice. Sometimes I have to be the one to take the risk. Because most of us tend to wait for that other person to
yep.
take the risk.
Yep.
Because then we're safe. Okay, well, man, that is really screwed up. I was only going to say this, you know. Okay, so, I mean, you know, we're safe then. So I think that's an important thing. If we can remember, we're all in that same boat.
Yeah.
I think a lot of tops end up being tops because they learned how to break that ice.
Yeah.
I think that puts you in that position. It's a position of power when you can do that, and we can all have that power.
Very good.
Yeah, I want to go to that point. You know, I've relied on often tops to actually give me permission, essentially, to
yes.
be an animal, to be not correct, or, you know, to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And because I am afraid to do it myself sometimes. But, I mean, not always. I mean, that's kind of an exaggeration, but I think I've operated on that level a lot. And, you know, so it's not my fault, it's their fault.
Yeah, it's funny about that. Yeah, I'm really good at de-potty training people on that topic. Okay, he's next and then you. Okay. You were next.
Honestly, if people are ashamed of who they are, and I think you said something about, you know, the tops are the ones that, you know, are okay with other things. It's simple. There are six billion people on this planet, or somewhere around that ballpark or something like that. And I think one of the reasons this group works out so well is because the simple fact is you can be who you are and no one judges you for it. Because we're all in the same boat. And when you can be who you are, there's no shame behind it. You know, there is nothing to worry about. There is no judgment. You know, and stop worrying about every soccer mom or every little hitchhiking Joe person that you meet on the street judging you. The chances of you seeing that same person again is extremely rare. And
I honestly don't care if that soccer mom gets offended because I walked by her little kid and I'm wearing this type of stuff. I'm never going to see her, so.
Okay. You remind me so much of myself at the same age. Absolutely.
And in this round, you know, with all of us men here, I feel that it's good that you're having this. And it's good for us to get related to one another.
Yep.
And it's easy for me to say, just be yourself. For me, it has taken years. It has taken practice over and over and over to take risks and just be, like you said at the beginning, just to be in the moment. And what I get is that how I can continue to be open is that I ask questions. You know, take the responsibility to ask questions. If you don't know something, ask somebody, or ask if I'm in the moment with somebody and we're playing or having sex. I'm willing to ask the question and listen to the feedback that I get. And the other thing is, it's somebody said it over here, it's an ongoing thing for me. Yeah, being a gay, being a black gay man. Coming out again in BDSM and being a leather man, it's a constant process. And I would just like to offer is that, you know, the declaration that I make is that for all the men I see here now and when I see you out on the street, I'm going to acknowledge you. And I think that starts with me first, is just acknowledgement. So if I acknowledge you, acknowledge me back. You don't have to verbally say anything, you know, blow me a kiss.
Or
say hi. But I think it starts right there. Is that it's the bonding starts here, but when we take it out on the street, for me, that's where it starts to make that connection.
Mm-hmm. It's showing several things when you say that. It's showing, you know, that you want to be part of a tribe. Like I'm always saying, we need, as primates, we need to be part of a tribe. It is stressful to feel like you are the only one who feels the way that you do. It's horrifying, and it shortens our lives. It really does, to feel isolated and left out and shunned and alone. By being each other's support, by standing shoulder to shoulder so that our new young people can stand on our shoulders, by being good men of the community, by being responsible for each other's safety, well-being, and success, even though it may not necessarily get our dick wet or put any money in our pocket, but because it's what good men do. To me, that's the essence of who we are, and that's really what we're really talking about underneath it, not just on an individual interpersonal play level, but also on a tribal level. That's why we've been so successful. So, yeah, someone else had something to share. So let's hear you
first. I just wanted to say, you know, the one thing about not being afraid about sharing what you're into and being embarrassed about that, there is definitely that stigma there, and you do have that fear of people judging you or possibly, you know, reacting badly to you by doing that. But on the flip side, one of the positive things is, one of the negative things is gay men talk about it, but one of the positive things is they talk too. And in a lot of circumstances with my partner and I, we've had situations where someone whispered something like, oh, they're into this, and they're thinking they're spreading something bad, and all of a sudden we're getting a phone call from this person going, so, I hear you guys like this, and it turns into a positive experience. So there can be both sides of it, too. You can have, you know, the network can work in your favor as well, where maybe people who you wouldn't have even dreamed were into something all of a sudden are knocking on your door.
Well, yes, I mean, it's a really good point and all that, and, you know, certain things, especially the more wild and crazier you go into, you're extremely uncomfortable just going around and telling everybody, well, I'm into fistplay, or I'm into, you know, this type of, oh, crap. But anyways, you're into that type of stuff and all that, so I'll clean it up here in a minute.
Oh, okay. It's okay, Slayer.
And the other part of it, too, is all of a sudden you'll find out there's a lot more people who are into things that you're into.
Yes.
Once they find out that you've unapologetically announced it, they're like, by the way, me too. And then you find that you're not so alone as you might have thought you were. Just because they don't shout it from the mountaintops doesn't mean that it's that unusual.
Right. It is. The freedom to be curious and ask questions.
Yes, and it can also work in your favor.
Yeah, it is good.
It's quite a nice level, isn't it?
One of the things for me, the greatest benefit has been that I found the freedom to just wonder, like wonder about the possibilities of letting go. I've always been afraid to do certain things, and I've found the confidence in this realm to not only share openly, but to allow myself to imagine greater. I think the funnest part of it is getting to learn about myself from the inside out and what I'm willing to not only allow, but also learn to accept that I have these ideas that have just been suppressed or dormant, or it was unthinkable to even consider before I got to this, shall we say, group of people who have way more experience than I do, and yet I've had the thoughts and just never acted them out. Now I can not only act them out, but I can also find people to torture in a pleasurable way. But I can also find people to interact with me in a vanilla way that happens to have a little kinky twist to it. So there are both there's many extremes available to me. But the thing is, they're available to me because I allow the thought and the wonderment and the imagination to go fucking wild. Before, I would have never considered it because I was some kind of deviant that should have been locked away in the loony bin because of what I thought or felt. Today, it's a form of self-expression. The idea, for me, is to come out the other side of self, go beyond self, and experience the freedom to be however I choose to be, not only behind closed doors, but in public, to have that one-on-one contact when I see these guys in public, just say, hey, and recognize that there's someone who is just as delightful as I am behind closed doors and also in public, to become one face. It's nice to be part of a group that is willing to expand itself, not only in new people, but in new ideas. In the art of allowing ourselves to just be whatever we think or feel as fun. And if it doesn't work, you try something else. And if that doesn't work, you try a different person. But the neat thing is, you have choices. You have choices.
Very nice. Thank you. One of the points that you said in passing I wanted to kind of expand upon is the concept of living under one agenda as opposed to two. I'm sure we all have stories to tell of people who portrayed themselves one way and turned out to be something quite different. Or someone who will say something one thing to your face and then say something else behind your back. I choose to have one agenda. You guys always know that about me. Not particularly stable sometimes. Sometimes I'm all over the damn place. But you always know that where I'm at is where you're going to see me. And that I'm not going to pretend, I'm not going to bullshit. I'm not going to portray myself as something that I'm not. Back when we talked about nonverbal communication, I was saying, if I'm dressed up, I only dress that way when I fucking mean it. Because I'm not going to pretend that I'm the Mr. Hot Stud, 9-foot-tall penis, if I don't feel like it that particular night, if I just feel like curling up and crying, because I'm just not going to live that way. So having a trustworthy agenda is number one on really what we're all talking about here. If you're going to be able to relate with somebody, you have to start from, a very basic level of trust. In order to have that trust, then everybody involved has to be as authentic as possible. And I use that word an awful lot for a very good reason. Back on the topic of sticking my thumb up somebody's ass. I wanted to just throw that out there. We're going to be winding up pretty soon. But what I'm doing when I'm playing with them, it's more than anything else, I'm finding out just how much they trust me, just how relaxed they are, just how much we're on the right level. Because if somebody is, again, like I said, very restrictive and very tight, that's up here, up in the head. I'm pointing at the brain, okay? Because we know perfectly well that if you go down to, you know, you get something up your ass and they need to get it out there, they give you one shot to cause you to relax. The doctor can put his whole arm up there, no problem at all, because it just relaxes. It's not being stretched. It's relaxing. Oh, have you ever had it happen with like something like Novocaine? Okay, just you're gonna have to take that one on trust. You know? But what I'm saying is that if we're tight in the ass, it's down here relates to up here in the head. If I've taken the time to establish that I'm giving them permission to just relax and be happy. I'm building that positive feedback loop of pleasure and stimulation. I'm training them to eroticize their ass. A lot of guys, I have to train them. Like, for instance, right now, I'm wiggling my nostrils. Some of you may not be able to see it, especially if you're listening to the audio. But if you sat in front of the mirror and you practiced, you'd be able to wiggle your nostrils really easily. But most people, when I say wiggle your nostrils like this, they're like, they do all sorts of weird stuff because they haven't figured out where the switch is. That applies to our butt as well. Because we have to train. I have to train people, many people, not everybody. There are noted exceptions. But if somebody hasn't learned how to relax the outer sphincter, I have to train them using encouragement, using reward. Doesn't that feel good? Oh, yeah.
And sometimes coming out of, for me, coming out of that top energy, sometimes if the ass is tight or the guy is tight, I'll drop down, I'll suck that dick and play with those balls, and that seems to get them relaxed too, because I love cock, so I'll suck some motherfuckers. and that seems to get it stimulated too. You know, it's like you got to try other things and still come back up to my level of the top energy, but have to be vulnerable for myself as a top. To, if I want this thing to, like you said, to keep going, I'm going to have to try different things. And that's one thing, because I used to get up in my head, my ego about it, that, oh, I'm top and I can't suck the dick. And now I get over that now. It's like, you know, I really want to, because I love the fuck. I love the fuck and I love sex. And you know, I own that. So I'm going to try what I got to try to get this, to get the mission accomplished. And it's about being vulnerable. Yep. Because, if I'm going to drop down and suck that cock, the bottom's going to, I'm thinking in my head that he's thinking this and all that, and somebody else said it here earlier is that, what he thinks about me is none of my business. You know, it's like, what really is that I want both of us to have a great experience, and if it's going to take some time for me to come out of that top energy, I'm willing to do that.
Thank you. That brings up a really excellent sidebar. This group doesn't have a lot of shoulds. You know, S-H-O-U-L-D-S. We don't do a lot of that. The reason why is because I'm personally allergic to a lot of the shoulds that are out there. Real leathermen do not dance with their arms above their heads. Real leathermen do not drink their cocktail through a straw. Real leathermen do not blah, 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 blah. Fuck that. Because that's just the opinion of the person who is talking, and I choose to dance with my arms above my head, and I'm really good at that. You know, that if you like to suck dick, for God's sake, what the hell's holding you back? Go for it! See, in my particular, thank you. I'm counting on you to hold up your end of it because, frankly, for me personally, as long as we're sharing, for me personally, the main use I have for a man's dick is to as a handle to flip him over. Okay, that's my main interest in a cop. That's just me. But everybody's got their own thing. Everybody's interested in what they're interested in. And for God's sake, let's just start out fresh. Let's let each other off the hook. And everybody, just be your own goddamn self and find reasons to love yourself, because we get enough goddamn potty training from everywhere else in our world. Let's start fresh. Start relaxed with each other and just find ways to please each other where everybody gets their goodies. That's really what tonight's about, is finding out what it is that thrills somebody, because the intention is to get them to new levels of joy and to reach those places yourself too. So, having expressed that, everybody, I'm going to go ahead and wind up at this point. Let's hear it for our interrupter, please.